My name is Bettina Wichers. I'm coming from Germany, and I work as a gerontologist in the field of dementia care. I work as a consultant in nursing homes on special care units for people with dementia in the later stages. And I put together the dementia and the integral theory since I read the first book of Ken Wilber. It was there at once, and that I have to do research with dementia in this meta theory. And I made some academic research about dementia integral, 8 years ago. And now I'm working in the field and have some practical research added. Before we start talking about an integral approach on dementia, with an integral approach on dementia, we have to be sure that we're talking about the same thing, because I think not everyone is so familiar with the definition of what dementia is and about the numbers. So I have one definition and some numbers first, and then I will go to my integral model, the four quadrants of dementia. I hope I can show you that. First, what is dementia? And there are a lot of definitions of dementia, what dementia is. And I think for us in an international community, we need an international definition. So the definition, so I took the one of the World Health Organization. And that says, dementia is a syndrome, usually of a chronic or progressive nature, caused by a variety of brain illnesses. That's important, variety, not just Alzheimer's. Most people think it's just Alzheimer's. It's much more. That affect memory, thinking, behavior, and ability to perform everyday activities. And in the later stages, we find everything in every moment of the day. Some numbers are important too. At the moment, at this moment, there are about 15 million people with dementia worldwide. And we have incidences of 10 million people every year. And there will be estimated 150 million people in 2050. I don't believe that, but that's the experts say that at the moment. And dementia is the seventh leading cause of death worldwide. So that are definitions and numbers. What is dementia? But seen from an integral perspective, we are here integral informed persons, and I have just questions. The first is it a scourge of humanity, as it's often named in public? Is it a burden, really? Is it a disease, as most people think? Is it really a disease? Is it an entity, as I named it 8 years before when I did my research, because I needed a higher perspective than a disease, and I looked for a good expression, a good phrase, and I chosen an entity, a thing. It is an entity. Is it a morphogenetic field? Is it a karmic thing? Or is it just a construct? I give you answers on my last chart, which you can't see, at the end. But I think it's important that we all find our own answers, not following the answers of the experts. So now you should... Ah, that looks good.
I can...
Yeah, but it would be easier for me if I could change on my presentation now, because now I have the four quadrants and that to tell... We tried.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hopefully it works with my two. Ah. Thank you. Okay. So this conference is organized around equal. So you have to have a view on the four quadrants of dementia. I can't go through all details of it. When I put dementia in the middle of a four quadrant model, I think about dementia as an entity, not as a disease. It's more than a disease. And we have what you see here are four other four quadrants, of course, and you see lines in every quadrant. And what you can't see is that there are stages in every quadrant, in every line. Every line of this is a developmental line, some upwards, some down, backwards. We have it's a question of the point of view. And what you can't see and what I've not shown here is, of course, in every quadrant you have types of dementia, how dementia perceives, is shown, and of states of dementia. In the upper left quadrant, I will take the first line later and show you some details of it. In the upper left quadrant, we have aspects like the perceptions of dementia of all involved persons. We all here, too, are forming the field of dementia. Dementia is more than disease, and here all your perceptions of dementia have an influence. The insight and the changes of the people with dementia, we differentiate between the cognitive and the emotional awareness of the changes. Psychotrauma, there are a lot of research about that, I can't go into the details. Biography needs spirituality. On the upper right, in the upper right quadrant, there's the most research done in this about the atrophy of the brain. If you die of dementia one time, you will have 25% less brain in your skull. Molecular aspects like biomarkers are very important research at the moment, and so on. In the upper left quadrant, there are aspects like the cultural meaning of dementia. There's a development in that too, that in Japan they changed the phrase for dementia. They let go everything like dementia and found a new phrase for it, a new expression. Relationships, marriage, grandparenthood, there's a lot of research and there's always development. And we have the upper right, the lower right quadrant, and I just want to take one aspect to show that there's development too, because in Germany we differentiate between six generations of architecture of nursing homes. The architecture of nursing homes have developed over the last 50 years, and that really generations. So there's even there, although there is development. And this is the ground where I'm standing on my daily work. I try to be aware of as much as lines in the same moment when I do supervision with the teams in the care unit, being aware of as many lines as possible at the moment. I think that is that what we as integral informed persons can do. Just thinking about, oh, he's nervous today, what is it with the light, what is it with the architecture, who was there before, what has he eaten in the morning, and all of these aspects. And that is something what's helpful with an integral perspective. Then I took the upper left quadrant, the first line, the perception of dementia of all involved persons, and tried to figure out how it appears in the people with dementia. This is a perception of dementia from inside. If you're familiar with the integral methodological pluralism, IMP, you know the difference between the zone 1 and the zone 2 perception in this quadrant. This is a zone 1 perception, and it's not an authentic one because I observed the people and I wrote that. So it's not really zone 1. It's a zone 1 written by a zone 2 perspective, if we are really correct. But I think that's more a scientific point of view. We have people with dementia on, I think, every level, every meme. That are the spiral dynamics colors which I use, and the expressions and the descriptions. Yes, I think there are people, and there will be people from on a turquoise level, on a yellow, and so on. I will talk about that later. In my daily work, I have people on the blue, with the center of gravity in blue, in red, in purple, and this perception of dementia on the blue level, on the blue meme, is something like, something changed, I know. I feel ashamed. What will the others think about me? No, I can't meet them any longer. That's a moment where they mostly go into kind of isolation. They don't want to go in the dining hall any longer. And then regression continues. And they go back in something like a red meme. And that is a phase of curiosity. Most of them getting very curiosity. If we are not able to comfort them the whole day. And it's not easy to comfort a person with dementia in a nursing home the whole day. So we have a lot of curiosity. Confusedness and curiosity. That is something like, what the hell is that? Why are they? So they are so stupid. I've changed. No, never. Stop that. I'm so furious. And that's really a difficult phase in the care for dementia, in the residential care as same as in the home care. And regression goes on and then comes to purple, and on this way, from red to purple, there's some way, somewhere losing the contact to our level of reality. And when it comes to a purple level in these people, they come to that's not the right expression, I know. When they come to the purple mean, the word view of the purple mean, it's something like, I don't understand. Where am I here? Who are they? I'm frightened. Not I'm angry, not furious, I'm frightened. This person seemed to be friendly there and there. Is that mommy? So the reality changes. So that was one perception. It's going down. The other one is that are we, the people who are caring. And that is, they are going, in the best way, they're going up with their perception, but not always. We have people with a center of gravity in red. They think something like, this is crazy, totally crazy. He's doing that intentionally, I know. I will not accept that. I will educate them. That is a dangerous meme in the care of dementia, especially when they are alone in the night shift, or when it's a light revanche between spouses after 50 years of marriage. Then it comes to blue. It's like something like, it's a real burden for the poor relatives. This must be a punishment by God. I feel embarrassed by their behavior. And when it comes to orange, it is like something like, it is the greatest burden for the economic system worldwide. We have to organize the perfect caring economy. And when it comes to green, it's something like, it's so terrible seeing them suffering, I suffer with them. We have to be more caring, more empathic, and they're right. Because we need more green in the care of people with dementia, and that is, in my opinion, the main challenge at the moment in dementia care, developing the healthy green meme. The state of the art in dementia care concepts is postmodern, humanistic, person-centered, green, but the green meme is underrepresented. We have the center of gravity in the care is normally blue and perhaps a little bit orange. A lot of red. We can't decide whom we want to have in the care. We have to take everyone because we have a problem with the staff. And the question is, how can we develop green caring competences in the red, the blue, or the orange meme? And that's very simplified is, I have to learn it. I was a long time, I looked with from the green meme, and I said, oh, you just have to learn to love and to be empathic. They don't learn when they're on a red level, when they're on a blue level, when they're on a orange. It's easy. Control red, strictly. They have no intrinsic motivation to be caring. Instruct blue. They learn sentences. In my case, I give them sentences for crisis, how they have to talk to people with person with dementia. They learn them. They make the experience that it works. And then they want more sentences from me. They don't understand the background, but they learn sentences. And it's more than I could imagine before, because it works for that moment. And the patterns of behavior of people with dementia are small, so it's quite easy. Orange, we can inform, then they would do the same. They want to be successful, so they do the same. We have to encourage green, and we have to find yellow or teal. Yes, that was... good in the time?
Yes, you are 5 minutes.
Oh, so much time. I was too fast now. Okay, so I can yes, a little bit nervous, sorry. So we can take time for this aspect because these are new. This has been my development over 16 years of thinking dementia and integral together. And my own point of view changed several times. And in the last half year, everything changed again. There was a change in my development, and there was a lot of discussion with people from the integral forum in the German-speaking countries, and with some other people from the States, and it changed a lot again. And now I think it's important that we have a look on what are the demands of an integral informed dementia awareness. First, I said of an integral informed dementia care, but I think awareness is the better phrase. The first thing is becoming aware of the complexity of dementia. It is much more than an illness. I think I couldn't show it so very well with my quadrant model. I should have gone. It's necessary to go deeper, but it's not just an illness. Illness is a definition of the upper right, and it's just a small part, the upper right quadrant. And if we are all more aware of that, we are not so afraid any longer. I hope so. Then it's really important to share the integral model of dementia. That's the same for every other disease. But this is important because the people on the orange and on the green meme are really interested in this model. They don't understand the first time. But when I work as a supervisor, I show it the first time, and then I can refer again and again and again. And I have to refer very often. And that changes things. And if we think back, for the first time we read something about integral theory, I think we can imagine it quite needs time to understand. I don't want to get them all to an integral level. That's not the thing. I don't want that they become more and more aware of the complexity. Then becoming aware, yes, that's my point of view at the moment, becoming aware that dementia is a construct. For me, it's just a construct. It's a helpful construct for most people at the moment, but it's a construct, but it's at the same time, it's really necessary that we do the regular work at the same time. When I'm going into the special care units, I never talk about something like a construct, an entity or something else. I do the regular work. I talk about diagnosis and drugs and conduct behavior. And yes, then the next thing is consolidate the healthy green and encourage awareness practices in the daily work of the involved persons. I work with metta meditation, small sentences, which I gave them in at the beginning of supervision, and that works very fine. And that is, yes, that is really new. That are really new thoughts from mine and of other people in the integral community. We have to consider dementia in the integral community. It is a topic in the integral. It's an issue in the integral community. But first of all, it is a shadow in everyone, in the individuals, as in communities, and it can be a big shadow for an integral person when the cognitive line is one of the main issues in life. And as when we look inside of us, the cognition is very, very, very important for all of us, for most of us. And when that comes to when it comes to a regression, there it's really difficult. Then I talked a lot of with some aging integral informed persons. The integral and they said, "Oh yes, that's really, really important." There is XY, and there's the one I haven't seen for years now. He disappeared from. Haven't seen him for a very long time. So there are aging integral informed persons, and they disappear. Where are they? And what is when they experience a dementia process? And there will be, or there are, we can't be sure, integrally informed persons or higher with dementia. What is important? Questioning rumors. There are rumors in the integral community about dementia among some people. It's important that we are questioning that. That is the moment where I say I need a diagnosis. I want to have a diagnosis first, because before I can talk about that, he has a seal on. And be alerted at the same time. And I think we need, I would say, to class awareness for non-excluding or further integration, integral informed people with dementia in the integral community. That's all.
Maybe you keep your questions, write it down. We will have a sharing afterwards. Are you okay with that?
Yes, of course.
So then we can go on with the process, take a little silence.
So for me, it's okay. Yes, in the other case later, in the lobby or something. Yes. Okay. Thank you.
My work is about the upper left quadrant, so it's identity, self, inner realms, not so much about the rest, but I'm aware it's there, so just when you start noticing, where are the others? It's not part of my research or work. So depression and integral perspective, my idea is that I like two main types of depression. So one type I call the symptomatic depression. It's, as the word says, a depression as a symptom of an integral struggle of some suppressed shadow material, repressed parts and qualities which could not be integrated for some reason. And the other one is the existential depression, which is completely different to me. It's a depression as a transformative state which affects definition of self and its boundaries. Mm-hmm. And it's almost something which is needed on the way of development. So we start with the symptomatic depression because it's a bit more complicated. So it can either be a symptom of inner conflict happening on a developmental stage where someone is at, but even more likely it's an accumulation of various difficulties, which means like failed attempts of integration or qualities originating from different stages of development. So that means if someone's identity is on an amber stage and they're like missing out for some reason to integrate certain qualities or tasks, whatever, the problem can manifest itself much later on in life. It doesn't need to manifest itself at the moment or at this life's period of time where someone is at. So I will just go through the stages and see like what kind of struggles or failed attempts of integration there could happen to contribute to symptomatic depression. So we start with red. They're like early stages, I know, but that's like not so important to me. So on red, the mental self appears, and that means like if the strong basic emotions as aggression, fear, sexuality cannot be reintegrated into self, the basic shadow can be created. And I call it basic shadow because it's just like the shadow of basic emotions. And that means like aggression and sexuality gets moved out of identity. And why that's so important, I'll show you here. It's the shadow is almost a physical one. So if someone cannot feel like aggression and sexuality in their body, they need to, it's not happening consciously, they need to tense up the parts where the emotion would rush through. So all the parts which like would move towards something, they get tense or need to be tensed up, because otherwise the emotion would just come up. So what happens over time is people develop chronic pain in all the parts where aggression and sexuality would manifest. So upper body, shoulders, necks, arms, lower legs, all the muscles which support the movement to express the emotion. And what happens is the whole, like the general overall emotional flow decreases by that. And the aliveness decreases. And therefore, like the body gets physically depressed. Not the whole truth, but that's the physical part to it. On the Ember stage, it's not a body-mind conflict anymore. It's, we call it the mind-against-mind conflict, because there, self wants to belong. It needs, wants to find out the rules to follow, to belong to a group. It wants to find the role. And there, we are very receptive to learn certain beliefs from parents, from teachers, from authorities. And what can happen there is that we develop script pathologies of false beliefs, something which is not helpful or fruitful, supportive in later life. And that's just like something I meet very often in with my patients. Beliefs like I need to be a good wife to be lovable, or I need to be a successful husband to be supportive for my family. All these kind of things which we once learned and are not so helpful for our health. And orange, next to self-worth topics, a very common thing is that all the spiritual impulses get suppressed and moved out of identity, because they're just moving out of Ember, and everything which is like religious or spiritual, they don't want to have to do anything to do with that. And that means like every authentic spiritual impulse cannot be lived or accepted and be seen as a part of being and oneself. On green, there are different things, but like the most important is symptomatic depression on green is that all the lost parts and the things which are not integrated yet will call for even more attention. Because if someone is like meant to evolve on to second tier from there, there's like no way it's gonna work without having a looked like. I talk about identity. It's not cognitively, of course. Somebody can move on cognitively to integral, but not like embodied, manifested, without having looked at shadow stuff, lost parts, qualities which are not integrated, and so on. So it can look even more severe on green, because it's like the stuff is coming up more. On second tier, now it's getting less that there is symptomatic depression going on, but if so, it can at least look more severe, because people start to see and feel as holes, and the things, qualities which are repressed as holes as well. So that means like a very common shadow is green, right, on integral, and it's not going to be like one specific person with some green qualities we are annoyed of. It's gonna be all the people, all the green qualities, all the green emotions which we don't like. So the suppression of the out of the self-identity gets even more severe. But it needs less to solve it, so that's the good news. So why is that so so important. It's so important because every problem needs to be addressed on the stage where it's originated. So what that means is we cannot just mix up the therapies with different struggles. We just need to find the right therapy to solve the problem. So, for example, like Calvin there, which is very scared of his shadow, for basic shadow we need shadow work, like to see what's happening, but we really also need body work. There's like no way to solve and release the energy of some suppressed anger sexuality by just seeing it and talking about it. There's like no way. On Amber, that's different. We don't need to box and like do sit-ups to see what kind of false beliefs we are holding on to. So we really can just have like a close look at script pathologies and false beliefs and try to find healthier beliefs where we hold on to guide us through life. On Orange, like transpersonal psychology can already pretty help be already pretty can be already pretty helpful because they lost touch with their spiritual part, right? So it's already can contribute to reintegrate that they're part of this part of being. Symptomatic depression on green will be about direction and purpose. So they will feel lost. So it's going to be about purpose for what's the destiny, where does the soul want to go to. So human potential and humanistic therapy can contribute to that. On second tier, that's something I'm not sure of. We actually exchanged in our group, and then like we found out that we think like the right view is getting much more important on second tier. It's not like if somebody has a green shadow, when there's someone who can enable a shift of perception at a second tier, somebody struggling with this on second tier, then it can already be pretty helpful. But the condition for that is that the person who is enabling this shift is at least on integral as well. Otherwise, it's not gonna be. Okay. So to enable a shift of perception on second tier, the person who enables the shift of perception needs to be on integral at least to help the person to see something. Yeah. Therapist, for example, yes. Thank you. Okay, so that's like the summary of the symptomatic depression. The existential depression is really different. That's because I experienced both of them. I just can say that it feels a little bit like dying. It's like the end of certain beliefs, concepts, and also about the definition of who you are. It's like the time between the old self is dying or the old beliefs are dying and the new is not there yet. It's like I summarize it sometimes as like it's dark, it's empty, but it's needed. It's just the self and identity is crumbling down, and the new me did not emerge yet. So it can be a time of like true transformation. And so where can this happen? How does it happen? It can actually happen on growing up, but also on waking up. But there's a little difference. On growing up, it happens can happen possibly between like all the major developmental shifts, and it can possibly happen at every threshold of redefining self. But if that's happening or not is kind of depending on your personality type. I'm working with the Enneagram a lot, and I don't have time to go into that now, but I just see, and probably it's also the case here, that there are people who really go through depressions every time there is like a major shift in their lives, and others who are not affected by that at all. So that's like really depending on your type of personality. But on waking up, it's not depending on your type of personality at all. it's almost like a universal part of spiritual practice, which we also call the dark nights. So for therapies, it's like really crucial to find out if someone is like meditating for years or what's happening to them in the last weeks or so. Just they don't, people who are in the dark night, they're not helped by taking drugs. People who are really frightened in a symptomatic depression, they might be helped by taking drugs before, like looking at their stuff, but it's just really differentiation. It's not the same thing. So, yeah, just to summarize, the consequences are different because symptomatic depression needs work. It needs psychotherapy, it needs body work, it needs shadow work. We need to look at our stuff. We need to find out which qualities or which things could not be integrated. But the existential depression is something else. It needs patience, it needs surrender, it might need a bigger picture to see what's happening, that it's not so scary. But all you can do as a therapist or coach is to accompany people to go through that and not like trying to take them out, because that's just gonna prolong their suffering. So that is it. Thank you very much.
Yes. My computer stops.
Yeah, low battery.
It could be. But then I didn't have a stick with me. So my computer is not working anymore.
Yes.
Maybe there's no electricity. No problem. I'm just going to speak about it. Happily, I have still my papers about it. Yes, that's good. And a little bit more light. Yes, that's good. Okay, my name is Jerry. been living for almost 2 years at the moment in Auroville, India. It's the biggest intentional community in the world, and also the longest existing, from 1968. So in the beginning of this year, we had our 50th birthday, still alive. But there are lots of processes of transformation going on, so it's not so easy to go on with each other. More than 45 nationalities are living there. And they were trying three or four times before to create something for a mental health. Because you can imagine when there is a spiritual transformation going on in your life, your psychological functioning is much under pressure. You have to be very grounded to survive. Otherwise, you have a tendency to go back in regression. And I was seeing it all around. It was one of the things I wondered the most when I came to Auroville, that there were so many people who were very in power games. Many people who were very materialistic. And we have a rule in Auroville that nothing is belonging to us. It's belonging to the world. No personal belonging to these things. So these behaviors were very contradicting. And in the end, I thought, okay, when I'm speaking individually with these people, they are very open, very spiritual. Their value system is according to Auroville, but when they have to do something together, they are very fast in a struggle about me and you, materialistic, safety. So totally not the same things. I discovered it is a reaction to their spiritual transformation. Because in a spiritual transformation, lots of old values, lots of old things to hold on are disappearing. And you are coming to Auroville and suddenly you are in a community where people are speaking other languages, have other thoughts, other ideas, and often most strong people are also coming to Auroville who think, I know. I'm going to transform things there. I'm going to present my own ideas there. So there's also a lot of struggle going on. In the former trials to get something mental health, it was not accepted. They did not feel that something of mental health care should be in Oracle should be beyond the higher level. So they were very anxious to speak about these things and to be recognized as someone who's not really belonging to a spiritual community with all kinds of psychological problems. So my challenge was to present another way of looking at problems with living, problems with identity, problems with emotions and thinking, then is available normally in mental health care. So all those labels of depression, schizophrenia, obsessive compulsive behavior, anxiety, things people didn't want to know. I developed there something on a model I developed before, and the model I developed before, and it was giving trainings and workshops about, that was the model of seven eyes. So that was a model of seven levels of consciousness. And the model of seven levels of consciousness was based on seven chakras. Only I couldn't work with the seven chakras because they were too primitive and not so much in a developmental way formalized. So their real understanding of what's going on was not often available. For instance, the first chakra, the chakra of surviving, well, it was not so much speaking to us, for sure not in the West. We have not the survival problem. And the second chakra, the sex chakra, well, sex is something we have to deal with in our life. It's not always so easy. But to limit it to the sex is also not giving much understanding. So I was meditating about it, and I developed from there another way of looking at it. That other way of looking is that I will just name them, or maybe I could also use now to flip over.
is
the first layer, the first chakra that became another one, and that's the layer of Shalistelberga, okay. The level of impulse. Because the impulses are at the basis of our existence. When we wouldn't have impulses, all kinds of impulses, we wouldn't exist. We are not realizing it, and it's very clear why we are not realizing it. Because we are working with it, we are transforming it, we are giving it meanings, and forgetting that it is originally coming from our impulses. So we are forgetting how important impulses are in our life. And the most impulses we recognize are our physical impulses. When something is happening in our body, say, what's this for pain or contraction or something going on in my heart? I don't know where it is coming from. And we are going to our physician and ask, do I have some disease or sickness? Can you do something about it? The second layer, by the way, this impulse is it's very basic, but it is also in the end where we hope to go to. We don't want to struggle our whole life with impulses we don't want to have. We want to have impulses that are giving us the right direction in our relationships, in our choices to do something in life, in eating the right things. That would be the nice, most nice things. So we don't have to fight it anymore, to change it, to correct it. And we know also from enlightened people that they are living from their impulses at a very conscious level. But in a way, impulsive. It's still there. I remember a beautiful story about the Dalai Lama, for instance, who was asked by a South American journalist, said, what's happening to you when you see a beautiful lady walking over? And the Dalai Lama, as he usually reacted, just laughing. He said, what do you think? I'm also a man. So it's not about the impulse itself, but the way we are dealing with things in our life. We don't have to feel guilty about things, but just we have to find out what is the perfect way to deal with it, to keep the balance. The second level is the level of images. For the psychologists here, that's the level of conditioning. We learn things by their results. Things are attractive or wants to be avoided because they are nasty. We are often not aware that we are learning that way, but when we realize that how important it is that we live by images, we have an image about this conference before coming there, because it is cost a lot of money, so we are not going there. We have an image about this presentation, we have an image about Trump at the moment, very strong images, and these images are images are all conditioned, and we are not aware of it. A little bit more aware about them than about our impulses, but still they are governing our life very much. A very strong example for it is when you are showing a stick to a dog, because a dog is also learning. A dog can be very enthusiastic. You throw it away and he can bring it back, or he can be very angry and oh my god, he was hidden by a stick. So you can see in this example how at this level we are learning and what the effects are. But again, like what I was telling about the impulse, I have to take care of the time actually, is it's very much dealing with that conditioning. We cannot do so much about it. Only when a condition has happened, what to do then? I'm now going a little more fast because otherwise the time is going on. Then we have the level of the constructions. we had learned already something about in the former presentations.
But so she's of the thinking mind. We have convictions.
And the with the convictions, we take on the lead in our, because here we are dependent on our situation. The situation is by conditioning, telling us, guiding us in our behavior. With our convictions and our constructions, we are taking the lead ourselves. We have our opinion. We have developed our identity. We know. But at the same time, we are very much away from the reality as it is, because we want to control, we want to have the power. But when we have a healthy development here, then questions are coming in. And the questions are about, I have a conviction, but it is not true. I have not a feeling. Things are not right. And you are discovering another way of perceiving the reality, and that's the perceiving by connection. You're connecting direct again to the reality as it is. You're opening yourself up. It's much more rich. It's the heart connection. You are now at that. And in the heart connection, it's not about love, it's about connection. The connection to the reality, and that you are really open to the reality, then the real love, the real compassion is coming in. Compassion cannot be a construct or an ideology. It's really something of the heart. You cannot escape it, even. When you are very much connected with yourself and other people, then you discover your inner truth, your ambition, your calling, your inner wanting, your inner, and that's the level of inspiration. And at that level, we call that level the level of self-realization. Here you are suffering with other people. Here you are going for yourself, because the suffering is too much, and the going for yourself is your inspiration. What you do, you can, and this is the first spiritual level at the same time, because what is coming up is something like beauty, unity, peace, all these common values are coming up there. Think as a painter, as Van Gogh. He saw the beauty, he had to express it, to put it, and to make his paintings. He sold only one of his projects, so he didn't do it for money. So it's a little bit isolated and separated and limited. It's the truth of your inner being, but in a small context, you could say. The next level is the level of wisdom. And that's the integrating level again. Not on a mental level, but at a seeing and an intuitive level. And you can see the things, you can feel the things in their context, not isolated, and in their development. And the last level, the seventh, is a level of attunement. And surrender. Where is attunement about? Well, in your wisdom, you get a totally other picture of yourself. You see how limited you are, how you are influenced by your whole situation and your development. And when we are speaking about evolution, we can even see that we as a humanity at the moment are only a part of the whole human development, of the whole evolution. There will be another race afterwards. We are just somewhere. So, and in the beginning, it can be very, you are speaking about an existential depression, it could be even an existential depression be when you are realizing how little you are, the whole universe. And it can have the effect of losing every meaning
why shouldn't I live? Huh? What's the meaning of it? What will change when I'm not here? So, who knows, Bettino Massaro, the young new teacher from Holland, now in America. Well, he went to India, got an enlightenment, and after that enlightenment, he was for 6 to 12 months very depressed. Because all the meanings he had before in his life suddenly disappeared. He had to change his whole system. After that time, he suddenly saw what really his job was. And he is very active now in doing these things. So then he found his attunement. The value, the energy that he really wanted to direct his life to. And it was really connected to his inner truth. How much time do we have?
Four
minutes. Oh, that's nice. The transient stage approach is the approach of going from one level to another. We have a steady state at the moment. We are totally at a certain level. And we are self-realized, living, but then suddenly there's something coming in as another consciousness, and lots of questions are coming in our lives, many insecurities. And like you were saying before, the next stage doesn't give the answers yet. And the whole system has to be transformed. What I'm doing in Orderville is that when people have problems, maybe I give one example. There was a very old lady, 75, and I'm in a couple of days 70 myself, so I have to be a little bit careful in saying these things. She came to me and she said, "Jerry, I don't know what is happening with me, but I'm falling every day. I don't know why. Every 2 days. Maybe something else, Alzheimer, dementia, or whatever." And then she told me other symptoms. And then I was asking her a lot of questions, and what appeared to be is that she was very much a mental person always in her life. And suddenly, the vulnerability of being in a connection, my hope system, was coming into her life. And she couldn't handle it. She said, "I'm going to groups and other people, and it's too much people around, I cannot handle it." So she was very insecure, even at the physical level. At the moment, she realized that it was not about sickness. Everything fell into place. She said, "That's true." And not, it's a possibility. She said, "Yes, that's happening to me. That's my inner truth." Realizing from what state to other state she was going, and that she had to protect herself also in that transitional process, put away lots of problems. She never fell in anymore. It was October last year that I had that first conversation with her. Nothing's. That doesn't mean that she has no problems, but they are of another kind. She didn't love the place where she was living, and since that moment she is rebuilding that place. Energy came again in her life, because there was a nice perspective. The fear is going, and a new attractive perspective is coming in. And with this other approach of psychopathology, well, let's forget the name psychopathology, because it's referring to a sickness or a disease. But with this new way of looking, it's much more fun to share with each other. What symptoms do you have? Oh my God, you are also on your way to them. And we can join each other. There's nothing to blame yourself for. There's nothing to be ashamed. There's nothing to be insecure about, because it's a beautiful transition where you are in, and it is completely logical that these insecurities appear in your life when you are in such a transition. So the old medical approach of mental, what we call still diseases, medical symptoms, it can be used, but in a function of another perspective. Going to a much more nice existence in consciousness, much more integral, much more wide,
much more where you really can feel home. So that's a little bit where I'm working at the moment. It's not finished. I'm in the middle of it. And well, it's 20 minutes is very short. You go very deep into these things. And I hope you could a little bit follow and understand where it is about. Thank you very much.
Now it will be time to go deeper, to dive deeper in discussions. And so the proposition is maybe you go with your questions and not really knowing already. And I don't know if you want to make groups around the presentators so that you can focus on the theme, or when you prefer to stay as a whole group because there are not so many to put the questions. We could also make a circle to have more like a space where we are together. Everybody takes a chair and we can make it.
Simple thing, and that for everyone is experientially available. Because often what I'm seeing is complex models that maybe are more going with the reality. People are not able to experientially see them or feel them. And then they are making constructions and expectations and ideas, and they are going to meditate on it, but they are obstructing themselves by having a clear vision. Image about where they want to go to. They are not totally open. That's the risk. So I want to stay only at levels that everyone can experience and can correct. And it's not true. I am not the expert anymore. This model is helping the people to become their own expert in life. And where they want to correct, where it is feeling right or not. Yeah? So, for instance, are you your impulses? No. Are you your images, your expectations? No. And what you are seeing slowly is by saying this no, is at the same time saying yes to what is beyond. But without filling it in, it really gets a chance to come into your life as an unexpected, beautiful, totally transforming experience.
I'm just wondering,
listen to some of your presentation, I'm wondering whether, first of all, the medical definition of dementia plays a role in your approach from an integral perspective, and as it is not a disease that suddenly happens, because it's preceded sometimes by 20 or 10 years of pathological imbalances, physiological imbalances, whether this is part of the picture that you're considering it from the beginning of imbalances and how to become, because that's what I'm doing, developing listening space for becoming more sensitive to body sensations and noticing imbalances before they become a congestion, which then develops into a symptom and then becomes a disease. So to whether this approach, I'm just wondering if this approach would align with or fit with your thinking, or is that outside of the domain?
I don't know if I understand. Totally right. Mm-hmm. I try. In my opinion, dementia is a process. It's starting on a mental level or on a high level. I'm not sure. Many years before, perhaps. Yes, I don't know. But I think that's common sense. That starts 20 years ago. It's something like that is too much. There's a first thought of that is all too much for me in these people. They are overwhelmed
before that?
Overwhelmed.
I understand once they have the diagnosis and they have moderate to severe.
Long years before.
I do mindfulness practices a lot with individual patients.
Yes.
And they have a mild to moderate dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing, it touches me very deeply.
Mm-hmm.
Like just last week, somebody said, he was an artist, a lecturer, but I've discovered a world within a world. I've just not been aware that there is this world. And I find new meaning, even in my condition. And I find, instead of it being a label, a disease,
mm-hmm.
there is a gift
in
it for me to become more sensitive to who I am. So it changed, it shifted his own perspective, his perception, and people around him from being a very reactive, angry person and a perfectionist. He can now take a deep breath.
Yes.
He does it 3-4 times for 1 minute a day, and he said it changed his own whole attitude. And that in itself, according to neuropsychology, because every thought creates a hormone, a neurotransmitter, it will have a feedback on his condition. So anyway, that's the area I'm very passionate about in terms of early dementia. Yeah.
So I think we can include nearly every concept. concept of caring for dementia, curing dementia.
I would not say there is a possible cure, but there's definitely 100% a reversal of symptoms if you catch it early.
Yes, I don't think that there's a cure, but if you are convinced for the persons, for the people, for the scientists who are doing their research, they're convinced, and so they create their own reality about dementia again. And this is important for me to have to try to hold all these perspectives, accepting that although these scientists who do research, I think it's unnecessary, but they're convinced that they're doing the right thing, and this all creates the field. And you have one point of view, and this I don't know where will go on.
I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's some sort of by labeling it, it's some labeling it as a disease, it's what you mentioned.
Yes.
It
yeah,
gives
so
us a
image.
Yeah.
Yes.
What is dementia?
Yeah. Yeah.
And all the expectations are going with it.
Yeah.
And so everyone has a little bit different
image
of that.
Yeah.
And we have to deal with that. We cannot make one out of it. And it has also its beautiful things. Because in the end, we cannot really live in the moment. And that's what we all want to do with our meditation. But the whole process of becoming in the Alzheimer's or dementia is terrible. Where people have to go through. So it's, there are many sides of dementia, of Alzheimer's and so on.
Yeah.
Two of you, you
well,
are first talk
more
of
a depression.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add one
thing
to this, because
it so relates to what you just said. That there is this super interesting book, I don't know whether you've heard of it. It's not famous yet. It's called The Gift of Alzheimer's by a lady called Maggie Latourelle, and I interviewed her, that's why I know about it, and then I became friends with her. And the story went like that she's a psychotherapist, but had nothing to do with dementia or Alzheimer's specifically. But her mother got Alzheimer's. So she was first frustrated and scared, and then she started to develop a new approach, like what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And she was using all that multidimensional awareness that she had. And with that, she realized that some of the experiences that her mother went through, which sounded like complete nonsense from a rational point of view, from a more spiritual and more multidimensional point of view, they started to make sense, and it almost seemed that her mother was having the same sort of experiences what is written in the literature about near-death experiences.
Mm-hmm.
That she's having those extra physical
mm-hmm.
sensations,
mm-hmm.
and also she went to a course, and Maggie said that after the course, she changed her personality in this physical reality while having Alzheimer's. So it was completely getting it out of that very limited concept. That's why she calls it the gift of Alzheimer's. It's super interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was interested in, I think the distinction between symptomatic and existential depression is very useful. And I think a few years ago I experienced both simultaneously, so I didn't really know what was wrong with me. Still don't. And I'll take your comment that when you acknowledge your symptoms and so on, there's really nothing to be ashamed of. I find an awful lot to be ashamed of. In fact, it was struggling. Yeah. Why are we ashamed? Why was I ashamed of my symptoms? Even still, I'd rather not let anyone know that I have depression, much less. So I'm curious to get both your comments about when these things happen together. Does it really matter at some level? It does matter, I think, in fairness. I think that was the point. But also, where does that shame come from? I'm really, it seems impulsive. It seems so. Okay, it's maybe images as well.
Very much images. Certainly, a lot of the impulsive.
Okay.
It's
yes. But it's
the image. Our lives. A young child.
child has is not ashamed at all about what behavior at all. And so it is something we're learning in our lives. So it's really at the level of the images. And what we are ashamed often because we have a fear not being acceptable anymore in our connections, in our family, in our social structure. People are going to go into rumors about it, and that you are not seen for who you really are. And only you get the label of someone who is depressed or is a patient or whatever. That's something awful. At the next level, the convictions is, I failed. At my age becoming depressed, my goodness, didn't I learn to deal with life? Life has beaten me at my age. That's really on the level of the convictions, about your own identity. You thought you were in control.
I'm ashamed of the falseness of what appears as the falseness of the self you were carrying or pretending to be.
Before, but then you are believing that you are depressed. The depressed is just I do not understand.
When you hit depression, either of the symptomatic type or both, and I think may I experience both?
It's always both. It's always depressed. That existential dimension is immediately coming in also.
Yeah.
Because where is your life going about when you are depressed, isn't it?
Maybe
but
you want to add something?
I just definitely agree to the part of the fear and shame. That's what I see people are working with, that shame and fear is very, very close together. And I would also say it's about the false identity, or what you just said. I don't think it's always appearing at the same time. It can, but I don't think thinking about what you said. Can you say it again, please? Just why you think it's
appearing.
Well,
every depression has also an existential implication. Mm. That's my
fair enough. Okay.
The other way around, I'm not so sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Understand?
I can agree to that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But every major happening in your life is asking for a new way of dealing with who you are.
Yeah, that's true.
Where you want to go to.
Yes.
And you are depressed, that's not easy.
Yes.
Because you are feeling so powerless, unable to handle your situation.
Yeah.
You want to retire and not to be seen too close. But when you are seeing that transient state, that it is a difficulty in a transient state, totally normal, because you don't have at that moment the ability to open up at another level, and that you are in the process of it, then you can open up again. And you are not defeated by life. There's another aspect coming in.
Interrupt you.
Sorry.
Because you had the time to speak a lot, and
mm-hmm.
I would like to open up a little bit more that anybody else can jump in. And sorry.
Thank you. I am interested in the process of resilience, and I was very touched by the speech about depression. Because for me, resiliency, I don't know if it is resiliency or resilience in English. It's a process of restructuring the personality after a drawback. And the question is, how long does it take to be in the process of drawing back? And when do you start to rebuild a new identity? And for me, it's very connected to the question of depression. And then I didn't see the thing that way. And I think also I make links between two speech and two messages. The way you look at things and with the integral perspective show that we are in a journey of evolution. And
maybe we give it a round and everybody can say something you take out of this three speeches. So that would be a share.
I just wanted to make a connection between depression and dementia, because I've worked with people over 65 that were at risk, and 50% of it's called a prodrome, a predictor. A lot of people with anxiety and depression over 65, half of them can develop dementia. So there is a connection, that's what I'm saying.
Does that fit to you, to make just a little quote, what she touches, what touches and what you are taking with you on this 2 hours? So it's not
I was trying to find a question because I wanted to ask the three of you this, but I'll just leave that a compliment. I was really appreciative in three very different ways how you've brought the integral map to a specific topic, and you've like helped us to experience it from a finer resolution. Like, you pointed out subtleties in different types of depression. I love the way that you brought in the different colors into the experience of dementia, to be able to see this as like something fluid to move between. I just wanted to say thanks to all three of you for bringing further clarification and like a further way to explore your topics.
Yeah, I got a lot out of the differentiation between the existential and the symptomatic. I think that's really helpful. And then as a herbalist working with health conditions, a lot of them complex. Most of my clients are either cancer or ME, fibromyalgia. How helpful it is to start applying, because I'm working as a practitioner, but to also have the healthcare system eventually start working from a much more open model is the only way forward, and I'm looking forward to that happening. It'll take a while. And then also, I do energy healing, so having some of this psychotherapy put into a chakra perspective, and the idea of transience is really helpful as well. So
everything's good, it's helping the transition.
Yeah.
I don't have a lot to say, I've got a lot to ruminate on. I'm grateful to you. I'd like to throw in the little bit about diet, because I think that can help over lifestyle questions, which includes diet. Getting the right stuff into the body mind, I think, is always going to benefit. And even turn things around. So that's what excites me.
I had a go already, so but I would be interested to know, if I may just go back later, how closely that maps onto the chakras. I think that's how you, but it's maybe a longer question than we have time for, but I was just curious about that more cerebral then.
Yes.
Okay.
I was very welcoming to listen to these talks. Thank you so much. It was great. And especially for me, because it resonates with my work. I'm also a therapist, hypnotherapist, and a lot of issues I could not at all solve until I came up with something very similar. So I do work with the chakra levels on a more differentiated way, but certain things only make sense when you put it into the right level. So I will talk about that actually tomorrow. And it was interesting that when I studied hypnotherapy, the first thing that we heard about depression was that you can't help depression hypnotherapy. It just doesn't work. Forget it. Let's move on to the next topic. And reflecting back on that statement, I don't understand why they said that. But now I think it's because they were thinking of very low levels, where you have it in the body,
yeah.
So you can't just work with the mind.
Yeah.
But when you get to the existential level, then it's fantastic. So it's very, very enlightening. I'm very happy to have heard it. So thanks a lot.
Well, to be honest, I don't know the developmental stages of the integral theory so deep, but it is good to hear that you can integrate your specific field to the integral. So the integral is integrating itself, and it's fun. Thank you.
I'm really grateful to our presenters for the invention. And what is important for me is that this revolution will be a subject. Interesting and enlightening.
Yeah, I feel deeper in it, what he said, and I can just feel the value of it for the difference of these sorts of depression he showed us. I can sense that it's really good to know more about it. I'm curious about the theme, how you can take an influence of a beginning sense dimension, maybe of yourself, maybe of somebody else, you know. I would like to know more about that. Yeah, and I found your system quite interesting. It's working in me how it combines with the integral system. I'm just getting about to get more familiar with that. I'm not so much in it. And so there's many questions in myself working on. But thank you very much for all of your presentations. Thank you for all of you and your questions.
Just want to say thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate your very interesting views and different stages of dementia very much. And I hope we can discuss it a little bit later in a more specific way. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I missed your talk, so I'm responsible for moving around and checking things. I really appreciate your mapping of from an integral perspective, and I would be very interested to continue the conversation. And what I've heard from you is, I found it helpful, but it's still quite abstract for me because I didn't catch all of it. Thank you.
For me, I also feel thankfulness to all of you. Thank you. What you said matches a lot my own experience, and also the really urge that we change our health system. I'm an osteoporosis therapist, and maybe because I'm also Swiss, it's good to connect and bring it forward and all over, right? And I make also the connection with the speech of Susanna this morning. If I could stop labeling all I perceive,
how big the map is really is, that it contains everything, and that we find a place for everything without this connection. Sometimes it's a little bit difficult to find the connections, but there's the map, and that there's always a possibility to find the connections between, and we can be in a very separated place, but if we have this meta theory, we can find this connection somewhere. Thank you.
I think I just want to thank you for making this a good experience for me, because I'm now close to present all, and I was really struggling with being scared of all kind of situations, and the most thing is, well, I'm scared of is that people are going to be very critical, because I'm very critical with myself, I know that, but I'm very scared of that, so, and I felt very supported by you, so thanks so much.
Well, and thank you for daring to share this to us.
I want to thank the presenters, because it was a joy both your presentations, and also very surprised by it. Previous presentation, because my mother got Alzheimer's, so it's not so long ago. I was really seeing all the processes myself. It's really amazing what is going to happen in that period. And also about surprise also by your seeing of these different kinds of depression and the existential part of it, and the origin of the existential crisis that's coming out of depression. For myself, I was a little bit handicapped, of course, by my father, but nevertheless, it has so much to share that we only go into the headlines. But it has so much, because it was my first intention that it should be practical and experiential. Mm-hmm. But how to go into that in 20 minutes is but for me, the main thing is that we have to leave behind, from an evolutionary viewpoint, all these images about sicknesses, the medical approach, please leave it, because it's so dehumanized. And then we are taking, and that's so beautiful here, that allies in evolution. It's such a beautiful title, because when we are looking from that perspective, all those old cultural images, limitations,